Hello, and welcome to another episode of Emoji Chat. Today we have with us Sushri, and she is a dear friend of mine. But I would love for you, Sushri, to present yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Roberto. So, like Roberto said, he's also a very dear friend of mine. I'm Sushri. We are currently working in the same company, in the same area of expertise, or in the same field, I have to say, supply chain operations. And I'm here today to discuss certain topics with you, Roberto, for which, in a way, I'm seeking guidance. But also at the same time, I would like to discuss about it more openly to really put my perspective and understand your perspective as well into the same. So yeah, to begin with, I'm working in the supply chain operations area since 6 years now, and I have jumped into a leadership role almost 8 to 9 months back, where I'm leading a team of five people in the same supply chain operations area. And since the program for the company, I'm working for an aerospace company, by the way, and since we are, our aim is to achieve the first flight this year, it is a very crucial year for all of us in the company. And that's why there are stressful times as well. And as a leader, I think it's even more difficult because you are doing people management. And I think that's one of the toughest jobs in the world, because you have to really get into their shoes to really understand what they're going through, and then take a decision to really support them, or to first really understand what they're going through and then try to support them or help them with anything that they need. And sometimes it's difficult because I think, and especially as an Indian, I have to say that we Indians cannot take emotions out of the equation. So, for me, it's important that I genuinely believe that being a good human being is the first thing that you should strive for. And this is what I do every day, where I'm doing my work properly, correctly, but at the same time, I'm also not taking emotions out of the equation, because we all are human beings at the end of the day. So I know that there are different kinds of leaders, but I am not the kind of leader who can really be very like kind of beating up the team to get something out of it. I can't do that. I am always holding their hands and to really understand what they're going through and try to support in any way I can. And like I said, being an Indian, I cannot really take emotions out of the equation. I have been brought up like this. And I think that in order to do my work, I don't have to change my personality. This is what I have learned in the course of 9 months. I can still do my work being the person I am, and I'm very proud of it. From what I have achieved in the last 9 months, what I have learned more than what I have achieved, because every day is a learning for me as a leader. But sometimes I think, because I am an emotional, I am an emotional human being, and I cannot take emotions out of the equation. Sometimes it is hard, because at the end of the day, sometimes I feel stressed because if my team is getting affected, I am getting affected, because they are my priority. That's my job as a leader. So sometimes when there are escalations and let's say they are coming to me just one day before the escalation, and I am really, really not happy. Last minute request. And I'm really not happy with that kind of a behavior or a task, because I feel that if they tell me beforehand, then I can take an action much in prior.
Okay, maybe before we jump into that, into the actual topic itself. Yeah. So I want to bring a bit of context because just so the audience, and I think a lot of the audience might feel connected to what you're going through right now, right? Because you're a new people leader, an up-and-coming leader. And by the way that you express yourself on how you lead people, I think you're the right kind of leader. But you are a new people leader, a woman in a male-dominated industry, still, you know, on the early mid-range of your career stage and you know, up and coming. So it's a lot of challenges in a startup environment, very challenging timelines with a product that is technically difficult. So it's quite challenging. I just wanted to bring a bit of awareness to the context of why what you're bringing the topic itself, right? So it's a big challenge. We have to recognize that it's a big challenge. So you were saying that part of your of what kind of brings a little extra stress into the equation is that normally you know the team comes to you with escalated topics at the last minute, right? So that's for you to intervene, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Like you said very well, it's quite a challenging environment, and being a woman in a leadership position is even more harsh. I have to say that, I have to emphasize on that, because I see it every day. I am in management meetings and I see how things go. But I also have to say that I have seen this at Lilium, at our company, that people are more respectful. They are respectful of my opinion and the ideas that I share. And I'm really grateful for that. I have not seen those kind of behavior from the males in the past, because I have worked with many managers and different kinds of management, not in the leadership position, but I have been in those kind of meetings and I have seen how they treat the women leaders. But at Lilium, I have to say that they are very respectful.
They're very mindful of it. Yeah.
So they are very mindful of it. And this is really a good thing. It's a very big cultural impact I see from a company perspective. And also regarding the behavior of the company as a whole, this really reflects how a company is and what a company is about, really, because I see that and I experience that every day. So I really have to give the credit to the management.
Fantastic.
In this case,
I think you contributed heavily on that culture, I think, yeah, because you've been working for the company quite a long time, and like you said, I've been lucky enough to know you for a few years, and you bring that sensitive approach to leadership. So I've got a question, yeah, because obviously we're talking about a team, and your team does come from different cultural backgrounds, correct?
Yes.
Right. Now, I guess this is part of on a increasingly global talent pool. Companies are able to reach a lot of people from all over the globe. Do you think that some of that difference in cultural backgrounds from your team can contribute on how they approach problems, how far they want to take it on their own before escalating? Have you seen that in your team, there is a difference on cultural background and how do they approach the problems?
I would definitely say yes, because I have to say that in the beginning, when this position was offered to me, I had this in my mind that I want people from different cultural backgrounds, because I wanted the diversity in the team. So I was very mindful of who I am hiring. Of course, the best fit candidate for the position. But I was also making sure at the same time that not everyone is from the same cultural background, because I wanted people to come from different backgrounds. So they are bringing what they have experienced and that will help each other in the team. So I would say that definitely helps, because it's also from their personal experiences that they have lived. It's never only professional. It's also personal, what you have lived and how you have grown into. So I would say that approaching towards a problem, and the way to solve it, the way you talk about problems, that really is different from one person to another in the team. And they perceive things differently. They think differently. And that is a really big advantage to the team, I have to say, because they learn from each other. I learn from them.
Okay, awesome. So, for example, because you said that one of the things that kind of stresses you out a little more is that they wait until the last minute to escalate things. Why do you think that they tend to wait until the last minute? And do you think that is positive, regardless of how you feel, or what do you think that is bringing you stress, right? Because right now, you may have, I don't know, but you can share it, but it sounds like you have a bit of a negative bias against the behavior. But why do you think that they wait until the last minute, and why do you think that that is negative?
To answer your first question, why did they wait until the first minute? I think it's also because of the time, because the person who is handling all these topics, that person is heavily overloaded. So it might have happened that he or she neglected that thing and they thought, I will handle it when the time comes.
Okay.
I understand that side of it. But the negative thing to it is, if being a person, I'm not able to handle my task, and let's say I'm completely overloaded, or I have absolutely no time, or I even don't know how to solve it, then that's when the leader comes in. So the trust has to be in the leader that if I'm not able to finish this or cover it up in time, then I have to escalate this to her. So I feel that I'm not sure if these two things are connected, but first thing is you have to recognize that you are overloaded and you have to acknowledge it, and okay, not working really to a level where you are burned down. That definitely has to be acknowledged by the people in the team that, no, this is the time I have to raise my hand and tell my leader, no, I can't do this. So you please take care of it, or please support me in any way you can. That gives me some time, or to any leader, to really comprehend that message and think how we can help. Because the moment the problem came to me, I came with a solution.
You would rather encourage them to come earlier to you. Is what you're trying to... Okay, so you encourage them to come earlier to you rather than wait for the last minute. And do you think that might be because... I'm trying to think out loud here, right? Like, could it be that, or are you confident that they have the right set of priorities? Meaning, maybe when you have your planning sessions, yeah, with them, they go through the set of priorities, and I don't know if at that time is when they analyze, oh, I might have, I don't know, I have capacity or, you know, time to do only 7 out of the 15 tasks that I've been assigned this week. And maybe that's when you encourage them, you could encourage them to say, hey, I'm not going to be able to do this, right? If this is important enough, then we have to reconsider priority. Does that happen in a sense when you do your planning?
Not on a weekly basis. I don't sit with each one of them to really prioritize or help them in prioritizing the task. I don't do that. It's a completely independent way of working with all of them, and I let them handle the way they want to. So I'm someone or that kind of a leader who doesn't want to pick every now and then asking, what is the update? What is the update? I can't do that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Empowerment is good.
So you have to trust in your people that they are doing their job. To answer your question, I don't really plan the priorities. I have certain objectives in the team as to what needs to be fulfilled. But considering the situation we are in today from the company, anything can be urgent anytime. So it also onto them to really decide, okay, this is the topic I should jump into. And they are doing it. by the way.
Okay, they are doing it really well. That's fantastic. So you, in a sense, you are kind of prioritized. I mean, you've set the high level expectations, and then you allow them to manage their task and work. Is what you're trying to say? Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, yes.
Then let's jump into why do you consider the last minute escalations are negative, and how does that affect you? I want you to kind of open up, right? So what is it that puts you into a difficult situation? Why do you think that a last minute escalation will be something that could potentially be perceived as negative? And how does that affect you emotionally, I guess?
I would say that first, when the last minute escalations come to me, it affect me emotionally because I immediately react. I know this is not right, and I should really process that information like I do usually all the time. But when there are high level escalations, and if it is involving a supplier, especially, or an outsider from the company, that really stresses me out because we are building a relationship here. And if an outsider is escalating because of any topic, it's a big thing for me because...
Okay, I see. So you're saying that you have a bit of a difference, right? So if the escalation involves an external partner or an outside party to the company, for you, it becomes even more stressful than if it's just an internal escalation. Okay. Exactly. Let's try to deep dive a little more into that. Why? Because obviously, if I'm trying to think neutrally, right? An escalation is an escalation, regardless of who is involved in it. But you seem to be, kind of biased against favoring outside parties to that equation than just an internal company escalation.
Yes.
What is it that you kind of weighted a little more on the outsiders than the insiders?
I would say that the outsiders don't live in our environment. They don't know what we are going through. They are doing their job, and they are asking something in return from us. So we owe that to them. And we have to do our job for them in a timely manner so they can trust us. And building a trust with someone who you have never met or who you have just a business with, that really talks a lot. That really, I would say, reflects what your company is or how your company people are towards that outsider.
I see.
That's why it is important that for me, I take that quite urgently and quite important for me that I don't destroy this relationship, because if there is an internal relationship, this is something which I can still handle. I can meet that person face to face. I can give them a call immediately and say, hey, I want to talk to you about this topic. This got escalated from your side. How about we have a chat and so on and so on. Try to really understand. I can also go to that person directly. But when there is an outsider involved, none of this can happen. And face-to-face meetings always makes an impact.
Indeed.
But with outsiders, it's not possible all the time because they are at a different location and you can't meet them. Yeah.
Okay. So, try to run us through the thought process. So someone from your team comes and gives you an escalation on, something that an outsider, someone from external to the company, has brought an escalated topic to you. So your team member comes, escalates, and then what is it? What's the modus operandi there? What happens after that?
What happened in the past was that I got very stressful because I had only one day to resolve, not even one day, half day to resolve that topic. I had to understand the whole topic because there was a whole lot of data behind it. I had to understand, I had to comprehend, get all the data in, and at the same time come up with a solution, because the next week I was about to go on a holiday and I didn't want my team to go through this while I was away. So I wanted to protect them. And I think that is what made me stressful, because I didn't want my team to go through that while I was away. I didn't want people
okay,
to chase.
All right. So we're deepening now a little more into the thought. Okay, so it's not so much, I understand, yeah, I'm trying to understand. It's not so much the topic itself or, I mean, obviously, when it's coming from an outside source, it seems to have a more, it's much more emotionally loaded for you and you become stressed sooner or maybe more intense. But the reason why I'm trying to understand from you is because you want to make sure that your team doesn't have to go through. That is you who takes the bullet.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So it's like an overprotective stress reaction to the escalation.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, you know, that sounds like a lot like a mother to a child relationship. It's great because that means that you're really emotionally engaged with your team. That means that they're going to be protected in a sense. But we talked about empowerment before. You mm-hmm. felt that for you was very important to mm-hmm. to feel that the team needs to be empowered. Do you think that there might be a bit of a disconnect between your intention of making, you know, of empowering them fully, but then only to, you know, to an extent, right? So only for the good things, like you don't want them to be exposed to the responsibility of empowerment. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, you are making sense actually, and I have learned it the hard way that there are different personalities in the team. People who can fight their own battles, people who don't fight their own battles because of any reason, be it they are overloaded or because they don't want to, because they need support or something like that. So people who can fight their own battles, for them it's a complete and independent way of empowerment, I would say.
Okay.
But people who need my support, but they can't tell me that they need my support. I feel that they are empowered in the way they do. They do their daily job and they know how to do it. There is absolutely no interference in there. But if they need support and if I'm not there, and if I am proactive in solving that thing for them, then I feel it's not an interference in empowering them.
I see. Okay. All right. Because they go through the pains that they cannot resolve themselves, right? So you still want to feel that you're there to resolve the issue when it arises and they cannot fight their own battles.
Yes. And I would also like to mention one more thing. This person, when I had to jump in and I was stressful why it got escalated in the end, in the very end to me, because this person was going through a lot, both personally and professionally. So I felt it was my duty to solve this, to not bother this person while I was away and go through this one more big blocker alone. So that's the reason why I had to jump in and say, okay, you know what, just solve this before you leave.
That is, you know what, that speaks very highly of your leadership abilities, especially above, that's my opinion. But so we've established that it was needed to jump in on the escalation, and that in a sense that you voluntarily want to take on these escalations when they come. Okay, so now let's try to analyze, why is it that it's causing a negative reaction? So if it is voluntary and needed, why is it causing a negative reaction on Sushri itself right now? I mean, why is it that it's affecting you negatively? Because at the end of the day, stress is a negative reaction. It's a negative emotion, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, why was it negative? It's because I understand that the action was voluntary, but the cause of it was not voluntary. This was not caused by me.
Understood,
this was caused by people in the team, and then it came to me. Why it caused negative is because when I have given you the chance of empowerment, when I have given you that independence in way of working, why can't you do it on time? This is what bothered me. And that's what made me stressful. Like, why didn't you escalate to me on time? I have a daily meeting with everyone in the team. I keep on asking, what is the issue you have? And these meetings are only to talk about your escalations and urgencies where you need my support. So my problem was, why wasn't it raised on time to me when I have given you that kind of independence in the way of working?
Okay, but I mean, if I was in your team and you tell me that I am fully empowered, right? Mm-hmm. I wanna make the best of my work. I will try to push an escalation to the last minute because I'm trying to resolve it myself, right? Mm. So if I'm trying to push myself in that team member's shoes, right? And in a sense, if you brought an environment of empowerment, which is absolutely awesome, and I strongly believe in that type of leadership environment and teamwork, I don't wanna cause trouble to my boss or my leader until it's absolutely necessary. So maybe I'm trying to see whether they is it because they lack their awareness of when they should escalate it, or are they trying to hold on to the topic as much as they can until they cannot do it anymore?
Hmm.
What do you think?
I would say the second option, trying to hold it up to them and try to solve it by themselves as long as they cannot do it anymore. They wait until the last minute because I think that people have a feeling that, why should I involve my leader? They would think, or she would think, that I'm not able to do my job on time, properly. And always trying to justify that I am doing my job properly. So I think they should give themselves the benefit of doubt. And okay. This is so... not happening, I think, with someone like that. And that's why it never came to me in the beginning.
So it might be, okay, all right, I understand. I'm trying to put myself in the situation. I'm trying to think, because if that happened once and then I get a stressful reaction from my leader, and somehow I might be a little more hesitant to come to the escalation, right? Yeah. And I was thinking early on this, because I was reading a particular article, and this is from quite some time ago, in 2008, and I don't know if you heard this news, but there was this pilot in Scotland by the name of O'Neill, and he was, you know, a solo pilot, and he was piloting his Cessna, which he took off from Prestwick in Scotland, and he had somewhat of a stroke, and he went blind mid-air. So he was alone in his Cessna flight, and he lost his sight. So he kind of radio mayday to the control tower, and then told him what was going on. And the control tower got in contact with a military pilot from the RAF, from the Royal Air Force in England. So this lieutenant colonel, I believe he was, I can't remember the details, but he went on, you know, kind of flew side by side and connected audio with him, and really guided through until they actually could land, even though they failed a couple of times on the landing, but then they actually landed on the RAF airbase. And you can actually listen to the audio of that exchange between the lieutenant colonel and the pilot, Olin. And he's asking him, hey, can you see anything? No, I can't see nothing. I'm blind or whatever. But when it's something that I noticed from that conversation is that, you know, when they're both speaking to each other, you cannot, they might, maybe, I mean, maybe he was freaking out inside, but you cannot tell in their voice tone, in their expressions, that they are kind of out of control, that they've kind of panicking, right? They're not, you cannot hear panic in their voices in that interview. Between the two, right, in the communication, and I was thinking to myself, how much more different could have been the outcome if O'Neill, the pilot that went blind, would have absolutely panicked and freaked out, right? And I'm trying to think, you know, what is the difference between, you know, taking that stressful, you know, life-threatening situation and calmly follow the guidance without seeing anything of a pilot that is outside your cockpit and kind of follow calmly those instructions, even though, you know, they actually fail sometimes. And then it made me reminded me of a story that I heard from another pilot instructor. He's used to be a commercial pilot certifier, so to speak, like, you know, one of those that is in the kind of like the judge of who passes the exams or not. His name is Dieter Uchtdorf, and he was also a Second World War pilot in Germany. And this guy has like thousands of flights hour, and he's got a lot of experience, and he loves talk about aviation. And since we both work in the aviation aerospace industry, it seems like the right type of story to share. And he said that one of the tests that he, you know, kind of the up and coming trainees pilots had to go through is what to do under a heavy turbulent situation in midair, right? So what do you do when you're going through a situation of potential danger in midair? And a lot of the pilots, when they actually you know, passed the exam, they did it well. But a lot of them, he said, that tend to agree on you have to accelerate through the problem, right? So go, you know, go as fast as you can through the problem, through the stressful situation to get out of it. And he said that it's quite the opposite in his experience. He says that the best performance will come when you slow down. So if you're going through heavy turbulence, he said that the best way to go through those circumstances is you slow down.
And
he compared that to life. And he said in life, when we're going through a traumatic experience or a stressful situation or something that we cannot control and it seems to be shaking us all over the place, he says, slow down, go back to the basics, right? Because we tend, you know, if we tend to react, oh, I want to speed through the turbulence. I want to get it over with. Then we might actually get even in more danger. And I think one of the reasons why that happens is because when we are under stress, we go into the fight or flight mode, and kind of our reptilian brain takes over, right? And it's just the survival mode of our brain. And even though our senses seem to be heightened for a specific period of time when you're under stress, under life-threatening situations, the reality is that you miss a lot of information going on because you focus on just the negative part of that situation and you miss a lot of the information that might feed into what to do best or how to come out best out of that situation. And I just, you know, when you were talking, it reminded me of these two circumstances. And there's also the part of the aftermath. You know, when you go through stressful situations, you actually go through a physical change, right? One hormone that the body produces a lot under a stressful situation is cortisol. And I can't remember exactly the facts. I could check my facts and then maybe change them on the post afterwards. But you know, it takes the body over 2 hours to get rid of your cortisol and adrenaline. So when you're going through a stressful situation and you kind of overreact negatively, it takes your body to clear the system. It takes them over 2 hours. So in a sense, you go through. It's like when you go through a stressful situation and you're just like, oh my gosh, you know. And you feel like depleted of energy. And when you repeat that over and over again, it seems like your energy is always gone. So why I'm telling you this, why I'm sharing this, is because it seems like if we're creating a kind of like a, like you said, a reaction, like a culture of reaction where if the escalations are coming and a kind of like a stressful reaction is given to that, then it creates a bit of a cycle. So I was just thinking that my advice would be maybe we need to put a lot of the effort into, okay, I'm not going to stress out, first of all, because I want to be able to support the team as best as I can and to give my 100%. I have to be centered you know, stabilized. And I think we talked about this not too long ago when we talk about becoming the calibrators of our teams, right?
Right.
It's part of what I teach in the nuclear leader model, and I think you've been doing a fantastic job. By the way, I know it's different when you see it from the inside, but from the outside, I'm able to see part of that progress ongoing. But I think maybe we could try to change the reaction. Instead of reacting, maybe let's act, which means that I need to evaluate, I need to take it in, and then before I do something about it, I need to make sure that that is the best possible outcome that I want to reach, right?
Right. No, absolutely. After I reacted that way, then I also took some time to reflect on it, that it is not good to really react in these kind of situations. You have to take it in, soak it in, and then you take your time to react to, like you said, exactly, to evaluate the situation and then see and find out where you can really support. Definitely. And I think this will come with experience, I have to say.
Of course.
When you go through these situations and then you know how to manage them. So I have to say that after that incident, have been many situations where it was quite stressful for me, but I took some time to reflect on it and to really think what is going on and so on. But so you're absolutely right. We really need to soak it in, evaluate the situation, and then try to see where we can support.
I have a three-step tool that I want to share with you. Yeah.
Okay.
It's called the RAW tool. RAW stands for R-A-W. So RAW tool stands for R is recognition. Yeah. So I need to be able to, when I'm doing this analysis, I need to be able to recognize what is it that I am feeling. Am I feeling just stressed? Am I feeling frustrated? So we need to be able to work on improving the label. Oh, I'm just pissed. I'm just angry. I am frustrated, or I am just, you know, I'm tired. I feel depleted, and you know, it's right before my vacation. I just want to go. I'm frustrated. So we need to be able to really properly label. So we need to recognize. So that's the R of RAW, recognition. Mm-hmm. And then the second step that I've used a lot, and it works quite well for me, is called acceptance. So A for acceptance, meaning at the end of the day, I need to accept it's okay. You know, I went through a stressful situation. I reacted. It's stressful. That's all right. It doesn't define me in any way. Now I've been able to label it because I recognize it. So I accept that is what happened, but I accept that that doesn't have to define how I will act in the future or how I am, right? Because a lot of the problems with our ego is that we tend to identify with our opinions or our actions, right? And it's really not that. You know, we can react in different ways in different states of mind. So acceptance is really important. And then the third one is the analysis that you were talking about, the W for the why analysis. And I don't mean it like a lot of people when they go through traumatic experiences, they are, why me? Why again? Why this? Why is so difficult? That type of why will take you nowhere other than whining, right? But the why analysis that I speak about is really that introspective analysis of, okay, so why did I react the way that I reacted in that situation? You know, was it because it's coming from an outside external organization, or is it internal, like you were analyzing before? Is it because it's coming from this particular individual in my team, but when the other one doesn't do it, I don't react the same way? It's kind of like the why, trying to find the root cause of why you felt, or you you know, that feeling or emotion in that particular circumstance, and kind of learning to repeat this exercise over and over again, kind of noting down, if you can, what is it that took you into different reactions coming from different situations. And that would allow you to become the observer. There is an author called Eckhart Tolle, which I respect a lot and I like him a lot. And he talks about the power of the now is about becoming the observant of ourselves. And because if we go through the cycle of automation of, oh, something happened and I'm just going to go through it again. And then next time that happens, I'm going to feel stressed. Then there is no learning, right? So I'm just going to leave that tip with you, because I think that tool it's worked magic in my life. And I thought it was a good thing to share with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very good tip that you shared, and that I can actually follow and use to really see how it is helping me and reflecting myself in certain situations, definitely. Because the first thing will be to really calm down, like you said, recognize it. Then you accept it, and then you say, okay, why did this happen? And then you think about how to solve it.
It's kind of like the knowing your enemy before you fight it, right? You have to know it, because otherwise, what is it that you're fighting, right?
Yeah,
so that's kind of the idea that the raw tool attacks. All right, so because you are a powerful woman, up and coming leader in the industry, in a male dominated industry. So what would be your you know, one, two, three, whatever, your piece of advice? What are the top two or three that you think, okay, for the women out there that are, you know, learning, you know, becoming new leaders in the industry, what would be, you know, maybe some lessons learned that you've gone through these 8-9 months, some pitfalls that you've learned from and that they could avoid, something like that?
I would say first thing will be, don't be hard on yourselves. That will be the first point that I would like to say, because we women, we always are hard on ourselves. I think women can do much more what they think of themselves, and we have that kind of ability and power to really manage a multiple of tasks. And we are compassionate, so don't lose that thing in yourself. So I would say, don't be hard on yourselves. Take it easy. This will be my first advice. Second thing for me would be to be respectful of everyone in the company or in the organization, with whoever you are working with. That's very, very, very important. It is very easy to lose yourself and say something which you will regret afterwards. But never, ever, ever, ever do that. I have learned this in my experience as of now as a leader, because when you are working as an individual, it is okay. But when you are a leader, you are representing your team, you're representing your company. And that's important, that you maintain your dignity, and you are respectful of people. Doesn't matter how people are talking to you, but you can always answer in a way where you are not disrespectful and you are putting your points on the table. You can definitely do that. I have learned it over the course of time, I would say. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And the third thing I would say is that not to be sometimes emotional, because we women are emotional and we take things into ourselves, like, okay, how could he say that, or how could she say that? Never, ever, ever put that into your mind. I would say keep the emotions out of the meetings that you have with management, with your leadership. When I say emotions, it's not about being empathetic towards the people. It's about not to take things into your heart. What is said is said, and what is done is done. Yeah, you have to forget that, and you have to move forward. This is what I have learned, really, big time.
Fantastic, fantastic. That is an awesome set of tips. Thank you, Sushri, for joining us today. Yeah, it was fantastic.
No, thank you, Roberto, for really inviting me to your podcast. I feel like a celebrity now. I'm really grateful.
You are a celebrity. What are you talking about? Feeling like you are a celebrity.
You always hype me up. You're so kind. No, but I have to say that I'm learning so much from you. Like every day, like I have been working with you since what, two and a half years now, and every time I have a conversation, there is always something that I'm learning from you, and I'm getting out of that conversation. So
Well, with me as well. I'm learning from you as well, yeah? So thank you very much, Sushri. So it was fantastic. We appreciate it, yeah? We'll talk more.
Thank you. Thank you. Absolutely. All right. Ciao, ciao. Cheers. Bye.